Do you want to tag us in? Should I tag us in?
Yeah, do it. I'm brain dead today. It's 7 p.m. No, it's 5 p.m. See, this is how brain dead I am. go for it.
Okay. Nope, never mind. I had one and then it didn't work.
And then it was gone. Okay.
I was going to do Welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast where everything's made up and the awards don't matter.
But that's good.
But everything isn't made up.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Because COVID is real, because facts matter. In this house, facts matter. Facts care about your feelings.
Okay. I'm going to try another one.
Okay.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast where we made up an awards show so that we could talk about some stuff we wanted to talk about.
Oh, you're leading with the fact that this is totally fake. I love it.
This is totally fucking fake. I'm Aubrey Gordon. This is totally fake.
I'm Michael Hobbs, and I'm also totally fake.
We're all made up. It's a simulation.
We were worried that people were going to, like, bind us to the decisions that we made on this episode. Like, you named this thing, and it's actually this thing. And we're like, oh, we don't know, man. We're just talking.
Yeah, so that's our context for today's episode, is we had this idea that it would be fun to do an awards show. We mostly just wanted to have an opportunity to sort of like crowdsource a bunch of suggestions from you all about things that we should talk about in different categories and do a little year in review kind of thing.
Yes. I was very impressed with the nominations, I have to say. We got 711 comments on our Patreon post.
Holy buckets.
And lots more on Twitter and lots more on email. And like, you guys came through. Like, we got very good nominations. Also, you guys really hate Noom.
So fucking much.
So much. They nominated Noom in like every category.
Noom. Get it out of here. Noom.
So for people who were not following or didn't see the post, the way that this episode is going to work is about a month ago, we asked for nominations in a bunch of categories for best and worst of 2021. We got a ton of feedback and we divvied up the categories. So we did some research and we're going to name our award winners. We're calling it the 2021 Grifties.
Yeah.
So what's your first category? This is the only one that we talked about in advance. You said that you had you had thoughts.
I do have thoughts. Okay, so our first category, Michael. This category is best wellness take from a celebrity or influencer. We got a bunch of great nominees for this one. Our top five nominees were Naomi Osaka, Kristen Press, and Simone Biles, all stepping down from major competitions to prioritize their mental health.
That was lit.
Fucking fantastic.
That was a bad day for like men on the internet who wanted to explain how like gymnastics and tennis work.
This is also one of those times where I'm like, man, you and I are in different corners of the internet.
Man.
Reply guys come to you like moths to the flame.
They can recognize one of their own in me.
Okay, so Naomi Osaka, Kristen Press, and Simone Biles. Next up, Jonah Hill and Kumail Nanjiani talking about what it's like to have people comment on their bodies and asking them to stop.
Yeah, we like it.
Number three, like it. Lizzo being interviewed by Glamour magazine and saying being fat is normal.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a movement. You just get to be a fat person.
Yeah.
Number four, Jameela Jamil advising folks not to take diet advice from celebrities. That is some solid advice.
Solid advice. Like it.
Number five, Dolly Parton funding vaccine research.
Oh, yeah.
All of these are fantastic. All of these are kind of apples and oranges. It's really hard to compare these all to one another.
Yeah.
But the ones that I wanted to talk about, and therefore the one that'll get the win, there were two. The one that I'm going to give the win to is Naomi Osaka, Kristen Press, and Simone Biles.
Yes.
And there's something about world-class athletes making a very gutsy, very public decision to prioritize their own mental health. They stepped down from the Olympics, the French Open, and like a good chunk of the regular soccer season to prioritize their mental health. And like, of course, it's an immense privilege to be able to quit something, right? Many folks just sort of like out in the world structurally can't take mental health leave without losing their job or their housing or their health care. But there is something about this that is really impressively powerful to see happen from public figures, from women and from Black women in particular, sort of across the board, that is really, really helpful and felt like an elevating of a conversation about mental health in a way that felt like honest and grounded and candid. Yeah. and felt like it was more oriented toward the maintenance of their mental health than focused on like the fallout of catastrophe, which is what it feels right. like our conversations right. about mental health usually are.
Also, I mean, I agree that that was like the best celebrity take of the year. I also think that the reaction to it was like the worst population yeah. take of the year.
Yeah.
As a guy who used to do gymnastics.
Wait, what?
I mean, not like for real, just like as a hobby in my 20s, but like you can really hurt yourself doing gymnastics. Like gymnastics has much higher injury rates than football and soccer and like a lot of other sports per capita because you're like twisting around, you know, and you're like these fucking crazy vaults where you can like land on your head. So the fact that people were attacking Simone Biles for like, oh, she can't hack it anymore. It's like, she will fucking die.
Yeah.
This is not like she's a little bit afraid of like getting hit with a baseball in the shoulder or something. It's like she could really life-threateningly hurt herself.
Yeah.
But it was extremely annoying how it was all these people who just like didn't take into account any of the context.
Well, and this is someone, in the case of Simone Biles, who the last time she was at the Olympics, she was there with someone who was like known for sexually assaulting.
Dude, I know. Jesus Christ.
Gymnasts. Right. Yeah. So like we're asking someone to essentially like return to the scene of the crime and perform at their job the best they've yeah. ever performed at their job.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels really intensely, deeply selfish and like completely off the charts inappropriate for
yes.
anyone to tell any survivor how to deal with that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's astonishing. There were also a bunch of like bad takes, particularly from white women across the political spectrum about like, I don't want young girls to think it's okay to quit.
Oh, that's not it.
Right. I feel like I saw a lot of that and I was like, I do.
I feel like people conflate these like wildly different situations. We're talking about an Olympic athlete facing a very specific set of circumstances. I don't think it's fair. People do this thing where they extrapolate from really high-level elite athletes or celebrities down to, like, normal people.
Yeah, and also, listen, if your kid is having a mental health break and
yeah.
being part of that sports team is going to exacerbate that mental health break, then, like, fuck yeah, quit.
Yes, then quit. That's, yes.
Then totally quit.
Also, one thing that's funny is the invisibility of quitting in American culture, too. People talk about things that they achieved or medals that they won, but I quit a lot of stuff when I was in high school. I joined and quit probably 25 things, and I turned out fine.
When I quit the Girl Scouts, forget it.
Dude, I quit the Boy Scouts.
A-plus decision.
I know.
The honorable mention that I wanted to talk about is this Jonah Hill asking folks not to comment on his body in any direction, and Kumail Nanjiani sort of opening up about how weird and painful and alienating it is to have people sort of constantly asking and talking about your body.
Yeah.
This feels so good and so helpful, and I'm so genuinely glad to hear people sort of complicating the idea that commenting on weight loss or body changes that are sort of socially rewarded is mm-hmm. inherently positive, right? When you are complimenting someone's weight loss, you might be complimenting a goal that they set and then worked for and then achieved, sure. You also might be complimenting their chemotherapy or their
right.
divorce or their
right.
eating disorder or their loss of a loved one or whatever, right? Like, weight loss comes from lots and lots of places, and
yeah.
we are sort of culturally sort of set up to believe that that's always a desired outcome. I think Adele has also talked about this, that she's like, no, I was in like a really high anxiety period of my life. It was really, really tough, and I just took that out through like a bunch of exercise and a bunch of other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is not necessarily like the result of like positive life changes or whatever.
Right.
I think it's especially helpful to hear this stuff from men who are sort of assumed, even in body positive and fat positive spaces, to be less affected and not affected by body policing.
Right.
That's not true. And the thing that this leaves me wanting for is I feel acutely aware that in both of these cases, this is stuff that's coming from people whose bodies have come into greater alignment with societal standards and these sort mm-hmm. of rewarded body types, right? And the thing that I felt myself longing for in thinking through these nominees was I was like, God, I wish that we could also have this kind of boundary setting from a person who's fat or has gained weight.
Right.
Or who has departed further from societal beauty standards, right? That there's a very different dynamic for between sort of like turning down a perceived compliment for a perceived achievement and asking folks not to comment on things that people feel also totally free to comment on, which is like weight gain,
right,
and people looking less and less like we think they ought to.
I also like that there's this emerging social norm of just like, you don't have to comment on this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody posts a photo of themselves on a beach, you can say like, it looks like a nice sunny day.
Yeah. You look happy.
Like no one needs you to weigh in on that particular aspect of somebody.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, two things. One, I would say, I don't want to underplay how hard this is to do, especially as a public figure at the level of a Jonah Hill or a Kumail Nanjiani, right? That is a level of public vulnerability, right? From men in particular that we are not accustomed to seeing or hearing about, especially around body image.
Yeah.
So even with extraordinary privilege, this is also incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of this, I feel like, gets a, like, this is good and let's see more from me.
Yeah.
Let's hear it from fat people, too. Let's hear it from disabled people, too.
Yeah.
Also, I feel weird giving this, like, this is our one good category.
I know.
So it feels weird to be like, congratulations on your grifty, Naomi Osaka. It'd be like if the Razzies had, like, one good category, you'd be like, ooh, I don't know if I want that.
The grifties and the thrifties? What are we calling this? The Swifties and the Swifties? No.
I think you have the mirror category of this, which is worst take.
Oh, I got the carnival.
I can't fucking wait, Michael.
This was a hard year to cover for the Grifties, the 12th annual Grifties, because there's just like, there were a lot of bad takes this year. This was the year of Olivia Munn's fatphobic memoir coming back up.
Ooh.
Where she was like, oh, like fat people shouldn't be able to drive. We need to make tunnels under the ground so that they walk and lose weight. And it's one of those things where people criticized her and then everyone defending her was like, she's obviously joking. And it's like, yeah, but it's a really bad joke.
Yeah.
But then that's also a weird one because the only reason that people were rooting around in Olivia Munn's past to dig up this stuff is because like they were mad that she was dating John Mulaney and people had like this weird parasocial attachment to him that like they wanted to kick her out of his life.
Yeah.
Her book is obviously really gross and bad, but also the reasons that people were rooting around were also kind of gross and bad. And like that whole thing just made me feel really uncomfortable.
I agree. It's gross and bad. And also like she didn't say anything that Wall-E didn't say. She has the same bad takes as like a Pixar movie.
Ooh, rewind to the 2007 Grifties. Todd in the booth. Todd, can you roll that? I'm rolling that. There was also, I don't know if you noticed this in the comments, but there was a debate on Patreon about the non-showering celebrities.
I did see this.
This was another one that I felt kind of weird about. It started with Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher on the Dax Shepard podcast. He says he only showers, quote unquote, soles and holes daily. So like the bottoms of your feet and then your sort of Iceland hot springs danger areas. But then like everything else you just rinse. Then they said something like, I don't wash my body with soap every day.
I feel like the real culprit here is the phrase soles and holes.
It sounds like something that people on Reddit would say. I don't know if that's where it started. But then Kristen Bell, who's Dax Shepard's wife, then weighed in and said that she doesn't shower or bathe her kids unless she can smell, unless, quote unquote, the stink appears. And then that launched like a whole other round of things. And then apparently the debate appears to have been closed by Chris Evans, Captain America, who was interviewed on the Today Show about, I think, something completely else. And they were like, what do you think about all these celebrities that don't shower? And he said, I shower all the time. I'm a very clean person.
God damn it.
This was one where I sort of see the arguments on both sides. People were like, it's weird that celebrities don't shower. It's like celebrity bullshit woo-woo stuff. But then people were also like, we're all probably showering and washing ourselves too much. I don't know that it's like any of my business how much extremely rich people are bathing themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really care.
This seems like honestly pretty harmless either way. I don't know that there's like a real debate here to be had.
Yeah, I also feel like many of the parents that I know take a similar approach with younger kids, right?
Yeah.
Getting a kid to take a bath can be a negotiation.
Yes.
And not every fight is a fight worth having as a parent. So if they take a bath on Tuesday and Thursday, but not on Wednesday, that's like maybe fine.
Different kids have different smells. Different kids have different activity levels. It just seems like one of those areas that we talk about on the show so much where people are trying to apply a universal rule to it. And it's like, no, some people probably do bathe their kids every day and that's fine. And some people probably bathe their kids twice a week and that's fine. It just depends on the kids and the preference. And I don't know that this is like an issue of public import particularly.
Yeah, I think I would have much hotter takes on people like not washing their hands after going to the bathroom.
I mean, that sort of leads us into the winner of this category. I had to group a lot of things under this category because there were lots of other bad wellness takes, and some of them we will get to later in the episode. But I think the winners of the worst celebrity take of the year are just like the coronavirus celebrities. All of the celebrities who did anti-mask bullshit, anti-vaccine bullshit, COVID is fake bullshit. I mean, there's a whole Brady Bunch of celebrities that like really fucked up this year. I found a list of anti-vaxxer celebrities.
Ooh, will you read me a list?
Some of these are very disappointing. So a lot of our listeners nominated Joe Rogan.
I gotta say, I feel like Joe Rogan almost goes in a category of his own.
That's
like
the thing.
In future years of Grifties, in say the 13th annual Grifties.
I know.
He might be a good candidate for like a lifetime achievement award. He like transcends a single category of terrible.
That's the thing. I feel like with Joe Rogan, you either have to talk about him for one sentence or for like 3 hours.
Yeah, that's right.
But then, okay, listen to this list of anti-vaxxer celebrities.
Okay.
Wendy Williams.
Uh-oh.
Olivia Newton-John.
Oh!
Rob Schneider, which that's not a surprise to anybody. Also, maybe I wasn't able to confirm this, but as of early this year, MIA.
What?
Fly like paper, get high like planes. I really like her.
This is like a little parade of disappointments.
A lot of people suggested Nicki Minaj and her cousin's swollen balls. She did not wrap herself in glory this year. There's also a human being named Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, sure.
I did not know who this person was for like the entire year. I thought he was like some obscure football person.
Deeply fucking not obscure.
That's the thing. I was like, if he was like a big person in football, like I would have heard about him like through some sort of societal osmosis. Like I vaguely knew who Tom Brady is. I vaguely knew who, like, Brett Favre is.
That's what I was gonna ask you, is like, who are the football people you know?
Dan Marino.
Joe Namath.
But that's the thing. I think I've lost touch with how out of touch I am.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what do you mean there's a football player that I don't know about? Why are we talking about this obscure football player? So for weeks, I was like, why is this guy still in the newspapers? Who is this fucking guy? But no, Aubrey, did you know he's actually quite famous? I learned this week.
He's quite famous.
I'm excited to tell you.
Who's he dating? He's dating somebody, right?
Oh, Shailene Woodley.
There we go.
He's actually kind of this fascinating combination of Hollywood woo-woo, I think via her, and NFL toxic masculinity stuff. So, you know, of course they asked him, are you vaccinated? And he's like, oh, I'm immunized.
No.
No.
Uh-oh.
That's not, we're asking something specific. And then I found an article from 2019 where he's talking about sort of how he got into woo-woo stuff via his wife. And he says, I gather my own spring water from the mountains every month. I go to a farm to get my food. I make everything from my own toothpaste to my own body lotions and face oils.
Oh, man. You know what?
Yeah.
What do you want to bet this is a raw milk dude? Right?
Chance of raw milk, high.
We should start doing celebrity raw milk ratings.
4 stars. Okay, so the real sort of winner. First, we're going to do a quick honorable mention. I'm going to send you a tweet, a thread of tweets.
Tweet thread.
You saw this. I'm 100% sure that you saw this. But you are better at like not shouting at people on Twitter than I am.
Oh, I recognize this Twitter name.
This is from a CNN contributor, a university professor at the George Washington University Public Health. I think she does a column for the Washington Post. This is like a relatively prominent health and wellness commentator. Her name is Liana Wynn.
Yeah, this got ratioed real fucking hard.
This was the ratio of the year.
Whoa.
So she is responding to, after the vaccines started rolling out, there was an announcement that Krispy Kreme was going to give you a free donut if you came in with your vax card.
So Dr. Wynn says, "Hey, Krispy Kreme, I love that you want to thank people for getting the COVID-19 vaccine. Every incentive helps and free donuts may help move the needle. However, donuts are a treat that's not good for health if eaten every day. First, if someone indeed eats an original glazed Krispy Kreme donut every day as your offer provides and changed no other aspects of their diet / exercise, they'd gain approximately 15 pounds by the end of 2021. I'm sure that's not your intention. Why not give vaccinated people a box of donuts to give to an organization of their choice?"
Love it.
Get those nonprofit workers fattened up.
I know. That's the thing. Donuts are bad, but give them away.
They can bring it to their office, donate it to charity, share it with their friends, or eat it all themselves if they really want. Do it as a one-time offer of appreciation. As a public health expert, I can't endorse a diet of daily donuts. Still, I appreciate Krispy Kreme's out-of-the-box thinking and hope that other companies will join in to incentivize vaccines. Vaccines protect all of us, and it takes all of us to end the COVID-19 pandemic. I will say, that was a weirdly hard-to-read Twitter thread because she is one of those people who hashtags everything.
Oh my god,
I know. Tags everything in.
I know.
Boy, oh fucking boy.
It's a masterpiece.
Did you? So you said, "I'm better at not yelling at people on the internet." Did you yell about this or at her about it?
The thing is, I think by the time I saw it, because right now it has 3,000 quote tweets. So 3,000 people have shouted at her about it. And I have kind of a rule of like, okay, if everyone's already shouting at someone, I should probably hold off. So I think I'd let like the rest of the internet take this one.
Yeah. 3,000 quote tweets and 2,200 comments just on the first tweet alone.
My favorite thing about these is every single premise in it is wrong. She says, "Yeah, this might be an incentive to get people vaccinated." And like, that's where she should have stopped. Like,
yeah.
Just nope, stop there. It's an incentive to get people vaccinated. People are dying. We need to get everybody vaccinated.
Well, this is also where we get into like the construction of fatness as an epidemic and the way that that sort of bumps up against being in an actual fucking global pandemic.
Yes.
We're trying to hang on to both ideas, and there is actually a fucking hierarchy of needs here.
Right.
There is a much more direct impact to people not getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
And sort of public health than there is to people having more access to donuts that are already like a dollar, but having them cheaper. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I just don't understand.
So, okay, that was like the bad obesity and COVID honorable mention. The winner of this, the worst celebrity, influencer, whatever, COVID take of the year is Naomi Wolf. It had to be Naomi Wolf.
I was just texting friends about Naomi Wolf. Did I tell you about this? The mnemonic?
No.
That was like a mnemonic for keeping the like think piece writers named Naomi straight. If it's Naomi Klein, you're doing fine. If it's Naomi Wolf, oh buddy, woof.
I did realize this year that I had been mixing her up with Naomi Klein for like years.
It's very easy to do.
I have had like a chip on my shoulder about Naomi Wolf for years because I read The Beauty Myth. So her foundational work in her career is The Beauty Myth, which came out sometime in the 90s. I think I read it when I was like 15 or something. It was a foundational moment for me because it was a book whose premise I agree with.
Mm.
And while reading it at age 15, I was like, this doesn't sound very convincing. And then since then, she has gone further into conspiracy land kind of quietly. So I found an article from before her COVID takes that says, Wolf published a separate Facebook post, also on Saturday, suggesting that the U.S. was sending troops to West Africa not to assist with Ebola treatment, but to bring Ebola back to the U.S. to justify a military takeover. This is my favorite one. She also suggested that the Scottish independence referendum, in which Scots voted to remain in the United Kingdom, had been faked. They faked the fucking Scottish referendum? The thing that maintained the status quo? Like, why would you fake that?
The whole thing is so bananas. I'm sending it via text because that's where I have it. A screen grab that I sent my friend Kim last night.
Oh, this one. Oh, yeah. I know. I think this was the one that finally got her kicked off Twitter.
It's really amazing. So this is a tweet from Stanley Bear that says, "Today I helped out at Leamington Spa Vaccination Center as a NHS volunteer steward." And there's a picture of a teddy bear in front of a vaccine center with a little sticker saying, like, "I got my COVID vaccine." And the bear is wearing a mask, like a stuffed inanimate teddy bear.
Yeah, it's like a totally innocuous, just like cute tweet, like helping people get vaccinated.
Yay! Naomi Wolf quote tweeted it and just wrote, "No! No!" And the reason that I read it that way is that the first one has one exclamation point and the second one has two exclamation points.
She's livid at this bear. She wants you to know this bear is trash.
A fight with a teddy bear.
I know. This is also the fucked up thing. That's like the seventh most deranged thing she tweeted during COVID.
Oh, no.
That's like barely in the top 10. This is a real one. She says, "This also confirms / explains the conversation I overheard in a restaurant in Manhattan 2 years ago in which an Apple employee was boasting about attending a top secret demo. They had new tech to deliver vaccines with nanoparticles that let you travel back in time." Not kidding.
Not kidding. Not kidding is important.
And the theory for this was that some Apple employees might have been talking about, like, Time Machine. You know, the app that lets you back up your hard drive?
Oh, God.
My personal favorite is, this is from a Business Insider article. She compared COVID advisor Anthony Fauci to Satan, described vaccine champion Bill Gates as a monster capable of mass experiments on humans, and claimed that children wearing face masks are losing the ability to smile. "I'm seeing kids with their lower faces hanging inertly, absolutely unmoving facial muscles when they take their masks off," she tweeted.
That just means that children don't smile at Naomi Wolf.
I know.
It's because you're listening to that Fauci devil.
So that's our winner for worst celebrity takes.
Okay. Are you ready for superfood of the year?
I'm so ready for this.
The nominees are collagen peptides, adaptogens like reishi and ashwagandha.
Our old friends.
Black Oxygen Organics. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just like straight up dirt.
Literal
like,
dirt.
Eat some dirt. Here's some dirt for you to eat.
That's great.
Number four, liquid chlorophyll. And number five, turmeric.
At least that's like an actual food.
Turmeric's totally fine.
That's the only one that's a food.
Adaptogens are also, like, they're also foods. It's fine if you eat reishi and ashwagandha and whatever.
Yeah.
For me, the winner is, because of how fucking ubiquitous they became out of nowhere, I'm going to the classic adaptogens.
Oh, okay.
I'm going, this was the big year for adaptogens. This is where we got fucking all of the moon dust products from Moon Juice.
Yeah.
You will go into a random coffee shop at this point and you'll be able to get like coffee with fucking mushrooms in it.
Oh, yeah.
So just as a reminder, adaptogens, this is from a New York Times piece on adaptogens. Quote, well, I'm actually going to send this to you. Never mind.
Ooh. Coined in 1947, the term adaptogen refers to substances that theoretically adapt to what your body needs and help protect against various stressors. Although the science is murky as a mushroom drink looks and these supplements are unregulated by the Food and Drug Administration, that hasn't stopped trendsetters from sharing their purported benefits, which include supporting the body's adrenal glands, reducing stress levels, and regulating hormone responses for an overall sense of homeostasis or balance. It's funny how, my God, it's so funny how they're all just so generic, these things. Because I looked into five or six of these for the weirdest trend of the year category. And it's like, this paragraph could be written about basically any of them.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like stress and like rebalancing your immune system and some mumbo jumbo about science, right? They're like, well, this is nature's way of X.
Totally. It also feels like the proliferation of adaptogens, the degree to which they have just sort of permeated so much of like natural food stores and sort of impulse racks at grocery stores.
Yeah.
Feels like a little bit of an echo of celery juice, just in terms of it's sort of everywhere. So people assume there's some kind of like really strong science
right
behind it, or like doctors are recommending it or what have you. Adaptogens are different. Most of the ingredients that we're talking about here have been used in Chinese medicine and Ayurveda since forever, for a long, 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 long time. as we discussed in the Moon Juice episode, this use of those ingredients isn't respectful of those traditions. This is white people Columbusing.
The whole framing is off in that there's not going to be a food that has these magical properties. It's going to be an entire balance of foods and all kinds of other factors that affect your overall health. We've had these claims for a million foods by now.
Yes.
And they never hold up.
I would also say two things. One that I just left out of the sort of preamble to this category, which I should have said, is like superfoods aren't a fucking thing.
They're not a thing.
We decided that kale was a superfood, but collard greens weren't, right?
Yeah.
There is a similar thing to be said about acai berries, right?
Quinoa. I have a huge chip on my shoulder about quinoa.
So this is part two. Our history as, I'm going to say, the we I'm going to use is white class privileged Americans, for the most part, have this rapid cycling fucking obsession with certain ingredients and foods. And all of a sudden, desire for those things like quinoa spikes. It fucks up the farming in the communities where those come from. It fucks up food availability for communities that are used to subsisting on this thing that there is not a global demand for or a sort of white American demand for. So there's also this whole history of like when we go all in on these fucking superfoods, we are systematically disconnected from the negative outcomes that we are creating
right.
for the people who have historically farmed and used these ingredients locally. And it feels like a really fucking irresponsible kind of head in the sand way of going about promoting nutrition, I guess.
Right. But also, I mean, I think quinoa is really good.
It is.
But I also don't think that quinoa is any more magical than couscous or bulgur or wheat or teff or anything else.
Yeah.
We just keep doing the same thing where you're like, ooh, this is the one. And then eventually all of these things end up settling into, yeah, sometimes you want to have some quinoa. Sometimes you want to have something else.
Yeah. It's a seed. Like a lot of things are seeds.
Things are seeds.
Seeds are good for you. Keep eating seeds.
Yeah.
What is our next category? Do you have one or are we on to most inescapable fad diet?
Ooh, that's it. I think it's fad diet time.
Okay, let's do fad diet time. Are you ready?
This was the one where everyone said Noom and intermittent fasting.
Yep.
And I texted you and told you not to do any research on Noom because I'm researching an episode about it and I don't want any spoilies.
Okay. Well, then we have a fucking problem.
Did you not get that text?
No, I didn't get that text, but also I didn't do any research, not any particular research. So this is just shit that I know from being a person who talks about diets on the internet.
Fair.
This is if you Google, like, what's wrong with Noom? This is all the shit that'll come up, right? So I'll read off the fucking nominees, but we all know the winner.
I wonder where this is going.
We all know the winner.
I wonder
winner.
Who the winner is, Aubrey.
The winner on this list and in your hearts is Noom. The other nominees were intermittent fasting, keto, plant-based as a weight loss diet.
Okay.
And Optavia.
What's Optavia?
Optavia is like a calorie restriction diet. It's not.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's it. Okay. That's pretty much all it is. And that's also pretty much all Noom is. So like, just way bright lines. Noom markets itself as being a refreshing alternative to a diet. They're like the non-diet diet, right? We're not teaching you how to diet. We're teaching you life skills so that you can maintain a healthier weight, quote unquote, is sort of the vibe. What is underneath that claim is the most diety fucking diet you could ever diet.
Yeah, it's just a diet. It's straightforwardly a diet. Yeah.
It's just straight up a diet. It restricts most users to a default of 1,200 calories per day.
That's like no food.
It bills itself as somehow taking psychology into account, but overwhelmingly the quote unquote psychology side just seems to be little tidbits of mostly junk science. So like Noom will do these quizzes that are about like, oh, did you know if you eat off of smaller plates, you'll eat less and lose weight?
Ooh.
Like widely discredited amongst researchers, clearly not established fact, is just getting pushed out through Noom. I feel awkward about this now because we had someone email us from Noom being like, we talk about your podcast and we love it.
Oh, no.
Which is fine. And also, I feel weird about it because we also talk about your product and we do not love it.
We don't love it.
So that one felt like such a fucking runaway winner. People are just like, shut up about Noom.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason that it feels so inescapable has less to do with how many people are on it, although plenty of people are on it, and more to do with the extraordinarily aggressive advertising that Noom does.
Yeah.
I can't watch a thing on Hulu or YouTube or whatever without getting Noom ads.
Do you think that's algorithmic? I've literally never seen an ad for Noom. And I think it's because like my telephone knows that I'm a 39-year-old gay man, and it knows that you're a 39-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, well, she's a 39-year-old woman. Like, obviously she's dieting.
It totally could be. It could also be that like, look, man, I do a fair amount of looking around at plus size clothing. I think there's probably some of that shit.
Yeah.
I will say the thing that I personally find most fucking irritating and insidious about Noom is it's all these people talking about how they like lost the weight for good, and they are all people who were thin before and remain thin now.
Oh, nice.
It's never fucking major weight loss. It's people who are like, I finally took off the last 10 pounds kind of vibe.
Yeah, finally, an opportunity for hot people to be slightly hotter. Groundbreaking.
Yeah, just for fucking thin people to like keep being thin and being like, I was thin before, but look how fucking thin I am now. Like, I just can't make myself give a shit.
Yeah.
That is so deeply not the way to market that shit to me, but also I might be impossible to market this shit to at this point. I don't know.
I mean, I think you're not like their ideal customer. I don't actually think these algorithms are very good.
What a get. If all of a sudden I just showed up on the podcast and was like, Mike, I figured it out.
You're like a CrossFit Noom person all of a sudden. You've got like one of those microphones and you're like shouting at me to do sit-ups.
Oh, Michael.
That's where I see this show going.
So we'll leave it there because we are going to do a deep dive on Noom. I have specifically avoided it.
Thank you.
Both knowing that you're going to do an episode about it and because it makes me so irrationally angry. And I am taking a fucking cue from Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles, and I'm fucking prioritizing my mental health.
Yeah, you're like vaulting into this Instagram ad could break my neck. I'm not going to do it.
I'm sitting in my mom's closet talking into a microphone, and that is definitely the same thing as 100%. Stepping down from the fucking Olympics. What's your next category?
This was a behemoth. This is weirdest wellness trend of 2021. So, okay, I've got a couple nominees. So nominee one, whichever listener suggested this, thank you and I hate you. This was a nightmare. Somebody recommended aged urine.
What?
This is a real headline from the Daily Mail. Man, 32, who drinks a glass of his own two-week-old urine every day and rubs it into his face as a moisturizer, claims it's cured his depression and made him look years younger.
Fuck me, man.
The other one, did you hear? I guess this was a big thing on TikTok. Did you hear about parasite cleanses this year?
Yes.
Tell me your understanding.
I have specifically tried not to have an understanding of it because this is another one of those things where I'm like, I fucking can't. Like, this is such weird, like, global wealth bullshit.
It's weird.
To be like, I'm going to intentionally give myself a parasite is my understanding of what's happening there. Is that not what it is? What is it?
I mean, the funny thing is, like, that's another trend.
Oh, God.
We've also had the, like, give yourself a tapeworm trend. This is the opposite. This is, we all live with thousands of parasites in us, and we have to eat papaya seeds to get rid of the parasites.
This is what they were fucking marketing patent medicine about in the 1800s. You all have a fucking tapeworm. Here, swallow this pill, which has a string coiled up in it, so you'll poop out something that looks like a fucking tapeworm.
This is like even less sophisticated than what they were doing in the 1800s. Apparently, the whole thing started when people started eating papaya seeds for their quote-unquote anti-parasitic properties. There's no evidence that they actually have any of these properties. But people started eating them, and then they would poop out things that they thought were worms. So then I think the industry glommed onto it and was like, there's like a money-making opportunity here. Let's just tell people they all have fucking worms and let's sell them like supplements and all kinds of other things that will get the worms out of them. So I found a website that does this like super chicken shit thing with statistics where they're like, around the world, 600,000 people suffer from intestinal parasites.
Nope.
And it's like, yeah, in like West Africa, and you're selling this to people in LA, the people with parasites, A, they don't need papaya seeds, they need medicine. B, they're not where your target audience is. You're just using numbers to make people think like, oh, I might have parasites.
Right. This would be like if we had a fucking malaria cleanse.
Exactly.
I have to say, I love that you, the person with the strongest aversion to poop-related subjects.
What am I doing here? How did this happen?
How did this happen?
Why does this keep happening? Every time. I also love that I was like doing some light Googling about this and I came across a fucking Goop article called "You Probably Have a Parasite. Here's What to Do About It."
Oh, God damn it. Did it also have the header note that was like, our in-house PhDs want to remind you that this is not scientific, but go on to read this article, please.
It is actually an interview with some sort of doctor lady who runs a anti-parasite cleanse clinic or some sort of anti-parasite therapy. And then they use her as the statistic. They're like, Dr. Jones, or whatever her name is, says 4 out of 5 patients that come to her clinic are suffering from parasites.
To her parasite clinic?
To her parasite clinic where she's selling them treatments. Like, of course she's going to tell them they have parasites.
9 out of 10 people who go to this fucking dialysis clinic have kidney failure.
Have you ever gone to a pet store? They all say you need a puppy. Like, this is just how this business works.
Okay, in fairness, you do need a puppy.
I mean, that's actually accurate. The winner of this category, I was not aware of this, but apparently this blew up this year. Did you come across this thing this year, how you're not supposed to eat vegetables because they're bad for you?
What?
This is a nightmare. I'm livid.
Tell me everything. I have heard zero about this.
So this comes from the weird, the carnivore people.
Oh, fuck.
The Jordan Peterson eat steak all the time people, who have now created this whole ecosystem of websites and health advice about how animal products are the true health food and you should never be eating fruits and vegetables because they have something called anti-nutrients.
So sorry, they're alleging that fruits and vegetables are olestra, that they're actually just like exactly. Sucking vitamins out of you.
That it's just like a little internal slip and slide and all the vitamins are coming right out. Yes.
What's the fucking basis for this shit? Do they offer any explanation, any evidence?
This drives me crazy. So I found this on the Harvard Medical School website. There are actual things in fruits and vegetables that are called anti-nutrients. So this, as a concept, is actually real, but it's basically just an example of something that has the wrong name.
Yeah.
It sounds nefarious, but there actually are little chemical proteins, enzymes, whatever, in vegetables that do block the absorption of specific things. So if you eat a ton of raw broccoli or raw carrots or something, it will slightly reduce the amount of iron that you can absorb. Apparently, this is some sort of evolutionary adaptation. I guess bitter tastes are a form of an anti-nutrient. It's something to keep animals from eating them, basically.
The bitterness in radicchio is it telling you to fuck off and leave it alone.
That's basically the idea. But of course, one tiny molecule of an anti-nutrient doesn't negate all of the nutrients that it has. It doesn't neutralize all the actual nutrients in it. And something like 95 or 99% of anti-nutrients disappear when you cook something, or oftentimes when you soak it in water. So if you eat raw beans, for example, they have anti-nutrients that, like, yeah, I guess fuck with your absorption of iron, but when you boil them, it's gone. They don't have any anti-nutrients by the time you eat them. It's totally moot point. It's just irrelevant. But it just sounds really bad. And you can find actual medical literature about this because, of course, like, people are studying it. It's an interesting thing. The fact that anti-nutrients exist doesn't mean that they're, like, negating the fruits and vegetables that you eat. Like, human societies have lived off of primarily fruits and vegetables for thousands of years.
And I also like that the proposed alternative, given the context, is, like, that's why you just need to eat fucking red meat all day, every day.
That's the thing. I found this deranged influencer who has a whole website about how you should be eating only animal products, and he has this whole thing because these are evolutionary adaptations. His logic is You shouldn't be eating plants because, quote, most plants don't want to be eaten.
Oh, we're talking about what wants to be eaten now?
Exactly. I'm like, wait till you hear about animals.
Your food comes from a place called a slaughterhouse. Try again.
There's also, he has some really good infographics on his website too, where he just lists fruits and vegetables and then the vitamins that they don't have. So he's like kale, vitamin K, 0 micrograms. Vitamin A, 0 micrograms. And you're like, well, okay, but what about the other vegetables? Like, no one is just eating kale for the entire day.
Oh my fucking God.
When eaten in concert with other things, you tend to get all the vitamins that you need. It's just, it's the logic of a child.
Just with all of this shit, I feel like, listen, man, eat what you want. You want to eat adaptogens? Great. You want to eat only red meat? Fine.
Yeah.
But making weird, spurious sort of claims about health and then reverse engineering them to seem true or credible is like, just eat what you want to eat. And then that gets to be the end of it.
So what do we have left? Do we have In Memoriam?
In Memoriam is my last category that I have.
All right. Do you want to do that one? And then we'll do Griftiest Grifter.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
All right. It's time for a shift in tone.
Somber. We're getting somber.
It's somber.
Quiet.
I will say a number of the things that wound up on the In Memoriam nominees list were also on people's most inescapable fad diet list. So diets never really die, right? Like, all of this shit is cyclical.
Yeah.
Low carb diets were whatever, out 10 years ago, in 8 years ago, and are maybe on their way out now. You could say the same thing about low fat diets. You could say the same thing about veganism. You could say the same thing about a million different things. This is mostly just for funsies. And it's also kind of a wish list.
What if they did this at the real Oscars, where they just listed the actors that they hoped would die? Like, Clint Eastwood's made some bad movies lately.
You just get some real surprises in there and you'd be like, who's mad at Sally Field? What'd she ever do? So these are some of our nominees. In Memoriam, the diets and wellness trends that we lost this year. Paleo. Clean eating. Apple cider vinegar shots. Kale.
My favorite thing about the Oscars is that you can listen for the clapping for each individual person, and it's louder for the more famous people.
Do you want to be our applause track for the
I'm trying to gauge where the applaud would be. Like, how sad are we about losing these things this year?
Just sad, reverent applause for activated charcoal. MCT oil. Bulletproof coffee.
Ooh.
Trying to make cauliflower into things that aren't cauliflower. Goat yoga. And of course, finally, the Dr. Oz show.
Ooh.
That's my big, like, applause
yeah,
break.
Yeah, I think that's the big applause line.
Look, it's happening for bad reasons. It's happening because Dr. Oz is running for Senate and Jesus Christ. But holy shit, I will take a victory where I can get it. And the Dr. Oz show going off the air is a victory.
The evil is defeated. It's like the end of the Godzilla movie. Like, we did it.
Yeah, except, I don't know what. Then Godzilla goes on to become president or whatever.
Well, like, yeah, then Godzilla's more powerful. But anyway, yeah.
There you have it. In Memoriam, things we either lost or wish we lost this year. Now I believe it's time for the big one. This is like our equivalent of Best Picture. The griftiest grifter of the year. It feels very fitting, Mike, that this was your category.
I mean, this is it's a long short list.
Great.
I had Dr. Oz on there because Griftiest Grifter, he's like grifting his way into a new field. Congratulations to Dr. Oz. Whatever the opposite of congratulations is to the people of Pennsylvania.
Congratulations? I don't know. Yeah. I was trying to think of it. It's terrible.
There was also, I was not aware of this, somebody suggested Khloe Kardashian's appetite-suppressing lollipops. Which is a very good grift because they pretend to have some active ingredient. I think it's turmeric or something related to turmeric or saffron or something. They pretend to have this like magical ingredient. But then when you look at the actual label, it's just a fucking normal lollipop. It's made of whatever, sugar. And so it's like, it is an appetite suppressant in that it's food.
the most effective appetite suppressant, eating.
There's nothing magical about the appetite suppressant qualities. It's just you're consuming calories. And so your appetite is going away.
That sort of family as a whole has shilled quite a bit for weight loss teas, which are just straight up good old fashioned laxatives.
Ooh, good stuff. That's plenty of hits. That's another cyclical one. Yeah.
You will lose weight because you won't get off the toilet.
You're losing all the parasites. There's also, did you ever hear of Zoo Poo? Did you get any ads for this?
Are you talking about?
It is exactly what it sounds like. Somebody nominated it and they were like, this is a company that says you have somewhere between 5 and 20 pounds of poo in yourself, and it's like, that's what's making you heavy. I was like, people kind of exaggerate or like speak colloquially in these suggestions, so it's like, okay, well, like, obviously it's going to be dressed up on their website. Like, it's not going to be, they're not going to put it like that because that's obviously demented. And then I went to their website and they have a colon cleanse supplement, and this is the description of the product. It's been said that the average American carries between 5 and 20 extra pounds of poo in their intestines. Word for word on their website.
Extra is a fascinating word.
What's the correct amount of poop that I should have in my bamu?
Oh my god.
This is a testimonial. Like, this is part of the marketing for the product. This is from a guy named Sam. It says, the day after I took my first dose, I was in the bathroom 8 times.
This stuff
will clear you out. But I never had any stomach pain or discomfort. I was consistently going at least 4 or 5 times a day the entire time I was on the supplement, which was a little inconvenient given that I'm a teacher. But hey, I don't care. I lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks.
Wow. Fuck the kids.
Congratulations to Sam. Congratulations to his students.
I really appreciate that you very sincerely took up my extremely terrible congratulations.
It's in the maintenance phase of the war now. Do you know of someone named Teddy Mellencamp, one of the Real Housewives of somewhere?
Ooh, I do not.
I only found out about her because there were a bunch of YouTube videos that came out about this app, program, something that she launched this year that was called All In, where I guess she had a baby, like same as Rachel Hollis. She had a baby. She was struggling to lose the baby weight. She eventually did through this regimen of what appears to be extreme restriction. And then people would ask her like, oh, how do you look so fabulous after having the baby? And then she launched this thing, which was, you know, an app and a program. And I guess you got like a personal fitness coach. And now there are people that come out and allege that they were put on 700 calorie a day diets.
Jesus Christ.
It's like really dark. Apparently, one of the obligations of the program is that you have to take pictures of all of your meals before you eat them. And you have to take a picture of your scale every morning.
Oh, this is legit lifted from Nexium.
Oh, I mean, basically, yeah. It's basically control tactics.
Jesus Christ.
According to the screen grabs that have now been published, it's people being yelled at by their trainers who are saying things like, oh, you don't want this enough, or, you know, the sort of Biggest Loser bullshit that you would expect from a program that puts you on 700 calories a day.
It's just a bunch of subs who don't know that they need a dom.
There's no safe word. That's the only problem with this program.
It doesn't have to go like this, team.
So I guess if you don't meet all of these requirements, they kick you out of the program and don't give you a refund.
What?
Or at least according to this Business Insider investigation. And then this is my favorite part. When all of this information comes out and all these journalists start writing about it, they, of course, contact the company. And their response is, you know, the allegations are untrue. Quote, our approach involves a daily intake of 1,100 to 1,200 calories.
Yeah, how dare you?
I know. You're implying extreme restriction when actually
we're just feeding you less than a toddler needs. Great.
So that's bad. Last runner up, you mentioned Bulletproof Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
The founder of Bulletproof Coffee is a guy named Dave Asprey.
Sure.
He, on his website, he lists himself, he self-identifies as the father of biohacking. Which is just delightful to me. Proud legacy that you've left us.
Yeah. Why, yes, I am the face that you should put on your dartboard.
So he has moved on from Bulletproof Coffee. He is now promoting Ozone. ozone therapy. You're aware of, like, the ozone, right?
Yeah, yes. That's as much as I know about this.
It's three oxygen molecules. It's a real thing. And, of course, it's in a very thin layer in our atmosphere, and it helps keep the Earth warm, and it's good. It has actually been a health treatment since the late 1800s. Again, everything is cyclical. It was actually developed by Nikola Tesla,
what?
Who found a way to produce it. And as soon as you have something that is produced and sort of seems technological, people will start using it as a health remedy. So in World War I, apparently, they would use it to cure people's wounds. They would put ozone, or like put like a little jar full of ozone on their wounds. And apparently it actually made them worse. But apparently at the time it was seen as a miracle cure.
Good.
So Dave Asprey, he is promoting ozone therapy, but he's promoting it through a method called rectal insufflation.
What?
I looked this up and I deliberately did not click on the images tab. It's something where you lie on your side naked and you bring your knees up to your chest and you put a tube in your butt and you pump a bunch of ozone, fancy O3 gas, into your butt. And this is supposed to deliver immunity, stress, acne, whatever thing. It's supposed to cure all this stuff.
I will say it's very funny to me to think that the cure for anything is gas going into a butt.
That's the thing. This, okay, first of all, this has been banned by the FDA since like 2003.
Okay.
And then I looked up what is ozone, and it's smog. It's the thing that settles in cities when car exhaust reacts with sunlight. So LA used to be covered with ozone. And now people are recommending it as a health treatment. Like, we actually worked pretty hard to get smog out of cities, and they're now putting it back into cities, specifically butts.
Just go to Los Angeles, Mexico City, Beijing.
Yeah.
And just, like, get your butt out, everybody.
Butt swallow all the air.
Yep.
But, okay, the winner, the greatest achievement of 2021, I was amazed at this. So this is best picture, griftiest grift of the year. Did you come across something called intuitive fasting?
Oh, fuck yes, I did. I hate it so fucking much.
So, okay, tell me what it is.
My impression is that it's a ghost-written book actually written by the guy who's big on intuitive fasting, but it has Gwyneth Paltrow's name on it as sort of like one of the leads.
Yeah, she wrote the foreword.
Okay, great. And it is this bizarre attempt to stitch together intuitive eating and intermittent fasting.
Yes.
I will say, I am not like an intuitive eating super fan. I'm also not like opposed to it. I think there are people who think it's like the keys to the kingdom, and I don't quite feel that way. But also, like, it's fine if it works for you, yeah. If it helps you recover from an eating disorder, if it helps you do whatever, like, fucking great, go, God bless. And there is one thing that is crystal fucking clear about intuitive eating, and that's that you eat when you're hungry.
Yes.
You eat food and you open up your relationship. You sort of blow open the doors to your relationship with food, and you just let yourself eat is like the biggest part of it. And that letting yourself eat is never in service of weight loss, right?
Right.
The woman who wrote the literal book on intuitive eating, Evelyn Tribbley, has been clear about this from jump, that in no way, shape, or form is this about dieting or weight loss. And if you see something billing itself as intuitive eating that says it will help you lose weight, run the other fucking way.
Yeah.
And it is either incredibly cynical or incredibly inattentive to try and marry that with the most restrictive thing, which is intermittent fasting.
Yes. These are truly opposite concepts. So intuitive eating is listening to your body's signals. I am hungry now. I am full now. I have eaten enough. Intuitive eating wants to reconnect you with those and really listen to your body. What is my body telling me that I need right now? Fasting is setting arbitrary limits on when you can and cannot eat. You are explicitly not listening to your body. You are watching the clock. This program of intuitive fasting is based on this 3-week cycle where the first week you don't eat between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. And then week two is you can eat stuff in these restrictive hours, but it's like a very weird restrictive list of foods. And then in week three, you can't eat for 20 to 22 hours per day, but only every other day.
God damn it.
So you are saying right there in the name two completely opposite concepts.
Yeah, it also feels like we're in this moment where we're sort of like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, corporations started to sort of appropriate the language of body positivity and sort of blow out the meaning of the body positive movement, right? Mm-hmm. This is when we got those fucking Dove ads. This is when, gotten Halo Top does quite a bit of this kind of stuff, right? That there is this appropriation of movement language in order to sell a product, which then, you know, sort of refracts the meaning through a prism of capitalism, right? That is starting to happen around fat activist language and fat activism. This feels like that as well, right? Oh, people are talking about intuitive eating. Great. How can we turn it into something that we can make money on?
Yeah.
Like, listen to your hunger signals and your satiety signals. How do we monetize that? How do we turn it into a gross and fucking honestly sinister fucking thing?
Yeah. He explicitly says in the book, oh, it's not a weight loss plan. The point is to, quote unquote, reduce inflammation, a concept that we have no way of measuring reliably, and reestablishing what he calls metabolic flexibility, which is also just a fucking thing that he made up. So it's like, okay, the real goal isn't weight loss. The real goal is these two random things. But then Gwyneth Paltrow, in her foreword, she's like, this is how I took off weight after COVID.
Great.
You're very obviously selling it as a weight loss diet and people are using it for weight loss, but you have this dumb rigmarole of like, oh, how dare you? It's not weight loss. It's not a diet. But you're also going to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the marketing of the Weight Watchers rebrand as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about wellness. It's about, you know, like living a happy, healthy life, but also living a happy, healthy life means you're going to be thin. Wink.
This nightmare is also more self-aware, I think, than we've seen in previous iterations. So I found a People magazine article where this woman who like seems nice did his plan for a month. She did the whole 4 weeks. She reads his book. And in his book, he says, this is an incredible quote, my plan is not disordered eating disguised as wellness practice.
Oh, fuck off.
It's like me saying to you, like, man, you know, we've been doing the show together and I want to buy you a car. And like, oh, I'm going to show up to your house in like a brand new car. And then I show up just like on a bicycle. And I'm like, now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, Mike, this is actually a bicycle. And you're like, yeah, that is what I'm going to say because it's a fucking bicycle.
Yeah. It feels important to name these things for what they are. That is a lie. If someone's telling you, you can only eat 2 hours a day, but don't worry, it's not disordered eating.
And it's intuitive. But then he also says like in the 2 hours a day that you're eating, you can eat anything you want.
Right. So this is the other thing that I would say is intuitive eating is in part designed to interrupt the binge restrict cycle, right? So like,
yes,
the idea that you would interrupt that cycle by intensifying that fucking cycle is utterly bananas to me. To be like, well, the problem is you weren't restricting or binging enough.
Right.
It's rare that I have moments of like genuine hopelessness.
Yeah, I know.
Fuck, man. If they can just change the language that they use and then do not only the same thing, but a more restrictive version of the same thing.
Yeah.
This is the Oprah Winfrey wagon of fat all over again.
Yes.
Right. Where it's like, yeah, man, you could totally like just stop eating and fall over from lack of food and nutrients, or you could not take your advice from people who have been famous for longer than you've been alive.
Yes. That was the Grifties.
We did it.
This was fun.
This was totally fun. I mean, I would close this out and just say, as we often do, but probably not often enough, if these are things that you tried out, if these are things that people you know tried out, do not get blamey with yourself or others.
Yeah.
We're doing this to have fun, to sort of illuminate different sides of these things than you hear about. It is not your fault for falling into a trap that was set for you. Mostly, it's just very fun to make fun of ridiculous things. And for me, at least, that helps me release their hold on me.
Oh.
When you can look at how ridiculous some of this stuff is, it can be easier to let it go. Yeah. So my hope with all of this is that folks feel less under attack by all of this and more empowered to just release all of this nonsense back from whence it came.
I hope that you're peeing into a jar and waiting for 2 weeks. That's the takeaway. That's the only one we didn't debunk. Notice.